Welcome to Career Tools. This week, Is This Normal? Episode 4. Question this cast answers are, what is this normal? Is it normal not to get corporate data? And is it normal to have sharp exchanges in meetings?
As you might assume, we work with many human resource professionals who are responsible for their organization's performance and training, and thanks to all of them for their suggestions and dialogue on helping us support you during this time where we're all geographically dispersed, and allowing us to discuss the virtual effective manager training. The plan is several digestible virtual sessions of about 2 hours each. The cost, $15,000 for up to 30 folks, where you can engage, ask Q&A, and learn more. Email us today at maggie@manager-tools.com for more information.
So if you've ever wondered whether what you were going through is normal, this is the series for you. Is this normal? We'll help you sort these things out. Lots of us wonder whether our experience is normal.
And since the other people.
Yeah, you can only be in one job at a time. And so you can only tell, like, these are the 10 things that are going on around me and the, you know, 20 people I know in my company. And then there's, you know, a few of my friends who I can say, hey, does this happen to you in your company? But the benefit of Is This Normal is you get the benefit of all of our experience and all the things we know about all the things that happen in companies. Before you decide whether or not to do something about it.
Uh-huh, exactly. Should I take action or not?
Yeah, because, you know, when we're early in our careers, often we take action about things that later we would let slide. You know, yeah. Later we learn to pick our battles and that thing isn't that important, or that thing happens everywhere and it's just the way things
it is normal.
Are. Yeah, exactly. And then you've burnt a bridge, so we don't want you to do that.
All right, so our outline for today's cast then is first, just a reminder of what is this normal? Next, talking about not getting corporate data. And then the third point we'll cover today is sharp exchanges in meetings. So what is normal? Is This Normal is an episodic series of casts just to help you understand whether what you're going through is indeed normal, or alternately, is it unusual enough to actually warrant you doing something about it?
Exactly. And the genius for the title of Is This Normal comes from Alison Green, who's a management thinker and gives management guidance. She's at askamanager.com. I highly recommend it. We like her a lot. We very rarely agree with people who give management
yeah,
guidance.
That's true.
but we often agree with Alison. Really good guidance delivered very effectively, very efficiently. She says, thinks a lot like us. And we asked her if we could use her idea of Is This Normal? And she very graciously agreed that we could.
Absolutely. Now, imagine you're relatively early in your career and something you feel is unusual or unexpected is going on. Now, you resolve to take some sort of action to address or to change the situation, in that you want to address the inefficiency, ineffectiveness, unseemly, inappropriate situation that you see happening around you. Now, would it make a difference to you if you knew that what you thought was unusual or was wrong or was unseemly was indeed, or in fact, the standard or the norm and completely reasonable because you didn't have enough experiential data to let you know those factors? Of course, we would all want to know, is this warranting of action or not?
Yeah. And regardless whether it's normal or not, we're going to share some guidance about how to deal with that topic. So if you go to the website and you look at the top right, there's a thing that looks like a Sputnik, the map of the universe. If you click on there, you can search for Is This Normal? And you'll find the other episodes of this series. The first one we're going to talk about today, though, is not getting corporate data, or generally data that you need from outside of your team, usually. Usually within your team, you get the data that you need. But often outside of your team, you can ask for data and not get it. Even if it's something that you need in order to produce something that you're being asked to produce, it's common not to get that data. So we're sorry because we know you wanted the answer to be
different. Yeah, we know you wanted it to be different.
But the answer to, is it normal not to get data I need, is yes.
Yes. Now, it sounds entirely ridiculous that an organization that exists to make money would actually withhold from you information that the individual within it needs in order to move, work along, create a product, sell that product, to actually obtain the revenue that you're there to obtain. It's like denying a fish the water they need to swim.
Yes.
It's like taking away the air of a mammal that needs to breathe. And yet it happens all the time.
Yeah. It does sound so ridiculous when you say it that way, right? Someone needs something to achieve something that the organization has agreed is worth achieving, and yet they don't get what they need. So there's a bunch of reasons. We're going to address the most obvious one, the one that people jump to first, but we're going to encourage you to keep listening because there are a bunch of less malicious reasons, I guess, for you not getting the data you needed. It's not Occam's razor. There's another Hanlon's razor, which says, do not attribute maliciousness to that which could just be stupidity or something. In other words, if something happens and it could either be stupid or it could be that someone is being malicious, it's probably stupid.
It's probably stupid. But our brains jump to malicious.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's not always what it is. Exactly, exactly. Yeah.
So, fiefdoms and politics. Human beings who work in organizations have goals and targets and things that they want to achieve of their own. So everybody in a 100-person company has something that they want out of, or more than one thing that they want. They understand that the organization as a whole has goals, and their department has goals, and their boss has goals, and that their work kind of builds into that. But at the same time, they have things that they want to achieve for themselves. And sometimes those goals for themselves align with what the organization needs, and sometimes they don't. For example, most of us would say, getting a pay rise is on my list of goals. You know, it's pretty common. Nobody ever thinks they're paid enough.
Right?
But for the organization, they want to pay you as little as possible. If the organization had a mind, it would want to pay you as little as possible because then it gets more profit, right? So your goal and the organization's goal are at odds. And most of the time, you rub along anyway. You know, when it comes to human beings, the organization may want you to have that data, but the human being that you're working with may not, for whatever reason. Sometimes the fact that they have data and you don't, is a way to leverage getting more of what they want if they want to use it that way. Now, like we said, sometimes it's stupidity, it's not necessarily maliciousness, but there is, you know, everybody can tell you at least one case of someone who hoarded data in order to get their own way in an organization.
Knowledge is power. We say it all the time. 99% of the time, guys, the reason you can't get the data is, back to what Wendy said earlier, it's benign, right? It's possibly confidential. It's hard to get. Or you just don't have a strong enough relationship. We talk about relationships all the time, right? Real Machiavellian politics probably isn't happening. That is, somebody is probably not out to get you, right? To make you not get the data you want or to make you look bad. Occasionally, this will be the reason you can't get the data you want. But until it becomes politically expedient that you do, it'll probably remain that way.
And complaining is very unlikely to get you what you need, right? Someone has a valid reason for not getting you the data that you want. And complaining doesn't change their mind about that reason. Complaining to your boss in order that your boss complains to their boss probably also won't change their mind. I mean, sometimes it was. If you said, I can't do this without that data, and it was important enough to your boss to use some goodwill with the other boss to say, look, I really need this stuff. Tell your guy to, you know, then you would get the data. But there's a lot of goodwill There's goodwill between you and your boss. There's goodwill between the boss and his peer. There's goodwill between the peer and their direct. There's a lot of goodwill being used up on a favor, for want of a better word, that may or may not be important to your boss, or as important to your boss as it is to you.
As it is to you. And we did that podcast a while ago, Wendy, the favor economy. Mm-hmm. The workplace is a favor economy. The way for you to actually get that data that you seek is by having relationships, by being persuasive. Right? Complaints are not persuasive. Being persuasive about why you need something and how having it will help the company, not you personally, but how it will help us meet our shared goals. Right? When you can show that having the data will save time or money or what have you, your boss, other people within the organization, your peers, your boss's peers will be more willing or more compelled to go ahead and lend their weight to that request to assist you, because they see now that we're working towards a common goal rather than in opposition. We're in this together.
Yeah. And if it's politics, sometimes you still won't get it. So just breathe in, breathe on, move on. If Career Tools is about teaching you not what we learned the hard way, I remember a million times when I've been doing a task and thought it was really important, and 3 months later, we're not even doing it anymore. Because, you know, time moves on. So 999 times out of 1,000, if it doesn't get done, if it's not important, it becomes water under the bridge.
Right. The world will not fall apart.
Yeah.
Starting June 17th in North America, but June 18th in Australia, we'll be hosting our first ever virtual Effective Manager Conference on Australian time. We've heard the requests. Many of you are wanting to attend. Fewer of you are wanting to do it in the middle of the night. And so we've answered. Visit us at manager-tools.com/training. There you'll find our virtual EMC and the list of dates. We hope to find them filled with those down under.
So another reason you might not get data is that it's confidential. We've split this into two. So this is, it's confidential, part one.
Mm-hmm. All right. So obvious categories in the first part here are data sets that contain payroll information, credit card information. A less obvious category would be data that might contain information about individuals or customers that will allow for them to be identified. So for example, lists of users of internal or external systems. If you can read the data set and by reading it, identify people who have access at a certain level and draw conclusions from that, the information should not be disseminated. If it contains enough information to interpret who those people are, confidential.
Yeah. And if you've just dismissed this because that's not the case in the data that you want, keep in mind that the data doesn't actually have to contain the confidential information. It's enough for the people to hold it, believe that it does, or be afraid it does to withhold it. And proving them wrong by showing them it's not confidential, again, is not going to help your case. They are going to find another reason, because nobody likes being made wrong. So if they've said it's confidential, you're probably not getting it.
Right, exactly. So another reason then, or the confidential number two would be, information can also be being withheld from you because it contains data that would tell you about or allow you to predict future plans. So not necessarily about people, but about the future of the organization or organizational decisions. So an example on this one, something as simple as asking for data about the amount of paper usage within your company.
How much paper do we order?
Right. How much paper do we order?
There's no way that can be confidential, right?
It sounds super basic. Mm-hmm. But if you notice that the last order was half that of all of the previous orders, now, what's the reasoning for that? Could clue you into the fact that half the staff in your building are being laid off, won't be there the next time the order comes in. We're planning ahead. We're ordering for the future, not for current. Right? Enough information, benign, feels completely benign, mm-hmm. but also leads you to a really stark conclusion.
Yeah. There's a reason that things stay confidential in organizations. And part of that reason is not to panic people. And so that whatever it is being rolled out can be done in a controlled manner and a one that doesn't stir everybody up. So often, completely benign information can tell you something about what the company is planning. And so they won't give you that. So the next one is it's too much work. Sometimes the data set that you ask for, that data that would be really helpful to you, isn't easy to get.
Yeah.
Like maybe it's mixed up in a whole bunch of other data and it needs cleaning. Or perhaps the one person who could get it to you is really busy on other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It happens all the time. The people involved are there making a judgment call based on your argument for why you might need the data. That is, if I'm going to go out of my way to help you get or obtain a difficult type data for me to provide, does the needing of the data justify the amount of work that is going to have to go into finding that? Or pulling a busy person off a big project in order to get that information from you? Is it worth the argument you're making? Right? If the answer is no, it's not worth the effort to get it to you, then you probably won't get it. You've got to have a compelling reason.
Yeah. And a reason that's compelling to the other person, not just in your
head. Yes, not just to you.
Yeah. All right, the last one is you're using the wrong channel. So formal channels aren't always, probably quite often, aren't the best way to get what you need.
Right.
Formal channels, that meaning making a formal request through your boss or through some kind of online thing. If you've been trying all the formal channels and you're not getting anywhere, then it's time to change your strategy. There's a lot of times whether we get what we want from someone else is predicated on our relationship with that person.
Absolutely.
Right? The data being necessary to our work isn't enough to convince another person to find it, to send it, to explain it, to answer questions about it. It's on their list, but it's like number 107.
Absolutely. An example that I have for this is we contract hotels all the time. And the formal way of asking for pricing information from a hotel property is the RFP online. Mm-hmm. And
they never
we
answer
have good
those.
They never answer those. They don't. And we have good relationships with our hotels. So while the formal process is doing an online RFP, we phone them. A good relationship with the person you're asking this work from moves your task so much further up the list. You're not in the queue. Now you're someone that we know. Just think about it. You yourself, how likely are you to put in effort to do a task that you deem non-essential for someone that you don't like?
Zero.
Yeah, like zero.
At the high S's and the high I's, they're a bit more like they're more likely. But us C's and D's, nope.
Absolutely not. Now, on the flip side of that, how likely are you to put in effort to do a task that's non-essential, Wendy, for someone you like?
Nah. All of a sudden, that's like, oh, that's 2 minutes. I'll do that right now.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Totally. You've done me a favor. I'll get you. Yeah, I got you. No worries.
It's so amazing when you think of those two scenarios in your head, how different they are based on your relationship with a person. It's amazing.
Absolutely. It's a completely different world. Organizations are not made up of a bunch of robots for getting work done that are in a very binary fashion, optimizing all of their actions based on the organizational goals. We're not robots. We are human beings who optimize their actions based on relationships. The better your relationships, the more likely you are to get what you want from who you need it, when and how you want it.
And if you've been listening to us for any length of time, you are tired of us talking about relationships.
Relationships.
But if you're not, go to the website, look for the map of the universe, which is the Sputnik thing I already described. And once it's loaded, click on professional success. And there is 100 casts about relationships there because it is that important. It's 50% or more of the success of your career.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So our second is this normal is sharp exchanges in meetings. So is it normal to have sharp exchanges? That is, you know, people not yelling, but talking loudly in a cross voice, sounding pissed, sounding angry, cutting other people off, maybe calling them some minor names. Yes, that is normal in some companies.
Yeah, absolutely. A company that we know well, that's known for a very blunt style, as Wendy described it, in meetings, is Intel. Intel uses what they call a constructive confrontation, which was introduced by Andy Grove and is characterized by them as a vigorous debate in which no feelings are spared, right? The theory is that only the best ideas will survive with fierce scrutiny.
Yeah, sounds hard. Intel's website actually describes it as a great problem-solving technique which aims to achieve a balance between addressing problems and maintaining effective working relationships. In other words, they say that it's about solving problems, but it's not about burning the people that you are arguing with. If you look at a lot of the stuff from former Intel employees, especially those who worked with Andy Grove, they characterize it differently. They would feel that in some meetings they were burned. But the idea is that they are having a debate about the idea, not about the person. So if I say that's a stupid idea, I'm not calling you stupid. I'm calling the idea stupid. So you could do your own research about Intel, but apparently they have this style or had this style and it worked because Intel's a huge company. It does really well for itself. I think every other computer has Intel inside. And so, you know, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, it's not without its value. Absolutely not. And for some employees, this kind of open, intense debate is a plus, right? There's people who love a good debate, right? Those individuals who love the fiery exchange of ideas. And they don't interpret that as being demoralizing at all. But others at the other end of the spectrum, that is, tends to be people in government organizations, nonprofit type organizations.
You would never call someone stupid in a nonprofit.
Right? They approach the world from the opposite corner, right? They tend to be far more careful about what they say and how they say it, taking into account not just the idea and its validity, but also the person and how their words might be impactful to that other individual. It's different.
Yeah, they're very careful about hearing everybody's opinion and not acting until the solution is something that everybody can agree on. And if you put a government or a nonprofit employee in the middle of an Intel debate, they would probably tell you that the people there were rude and abusive.
Absolutely.
And that characterization of what they see is just the different experiences. It's the same behavior. Whether or not it's acceptable is different in different companies. So if it's happening a lot in your company and nobody seems to think that it's a big deal, everybody walks out of the meeting room, shakes hands, says, good to see you, Bob, and walks off, then it's probably normal at your company to work at that level. If there's people crying in corridors or...
That's not good, guys. You know, it's not okay.
If there's people... who appear to have like fallen out after the meeting and they don't shake hands and they don't make eye contact, they just leave in opposite directions, then what happened in that meeting is probably not normal. And you can decide. You can be the person who likes the rough and tumble and live in an Intel world and be very happy. You can be the kind of person who's very careful with their language, careful to consider everybody's thoughts, and live in a government or nonprofit world and be very happy. The problem is when you're in the wrong world.
And when you're not in the world that you prefer.
Yeah, exactly. If you know, whilst we don't say that DISC profiles should work in certain jobs or certain industries because anybody can do anything, a high S in Intel would probably be fairly miserable fairly quickly.
Absolutely. Being aware and knowing that there's a huge range of communication styles between companies will, from an actionable perspective, help you decide, is this the kind of place that I want to work? Like, is this the kind of place that I even want to submit my resume for? Do they tend to work or make decisions in a way that meets my internal style? And that way you can decide, if I love debating and I love the feisty, fiery conversation, the sharp exchange, Intel might be the place for you. And if you prefer democratic decision-making and taking votes and talking things through, and you don't mind that it takes a bit of extra time to get there because it's how you'd prefer it, then choosing elsewhere.
Yeah, you want to make sure the company that you are working in works that way. And don't take what a company says on their website for granted.
Yeah, believe that all the time.
Intel's website's description of constructive confrontation is quite far from the description given by the people who work or have worked there. And the answer to that question, the answer to that problem is not to, when you go for the interview, say, what's the work culture like here? Because your hiring manager is in a sales mode and he's trying to sell you on the job. And what happens when people sell you things? They forget to tell you the bad stuff.
Well, yeah, they only tell you the good.
Yeah. So if you ask, what's the culture like here? They'll say, oh, it's great. We're very collegial. We like to see it. We like to hear everybody's ideas. You know, we like to use the best, you know, meritocracy, all of that stuff, right? That's what they'll tell you every time. So you can't rely on that. So don't ask it. It's a waste of a question.
Yeah, it's just a waste of a question.
You're not going to get a true answer. Do your own research. So if Glassdoor is one of them, I think LinkedIn has a similar system of anonymous ratings for companies. Now, you have to remember that people who post anonymous ratings on the internet are either very happy or very sad. So you have to kind of find the middle ground. Think of it like Amazon. Would you buy this product? But it's a good way to get an idea of the way that a company works.
So, in summary, now you know. It's normal to not be able to get the data that you want or need at all times. And it's normal to have a vigorous debate in your meetings. As normal as it is not.
Yeah. I hope that was helpful. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you, Andy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with some new topics.